Episode 16 of By Our Own Hands. I was amazed at what I saw. Dugald Rankin was walking through our hall with two huge hounds. They were nearly the size of ponies. I stood with my mouth agape. Sean soon joined me. Mr. Rankin was a character with a typically nasty disposition, so it surprised me when he stopped and allowed me and Sean to stroke the dogs. I was absolutely fascinated. I had never before owned a dog, and I had never seen any that were as large as these two. They were regal and beautiful. I swore to myself that if I ever owned a dog, it would be one of these beauties. Neither Sean nor I spoke. We were both mesmerized by these amazing creatures. Mr. Rankin seemed to genuinely enjoy our reaction. They are Scottish deerhounds, but your master is certain that they are Irish wolfhounds, he said. Can they be both? I asked. Mr. Rankin smiled. Sure, love, of course, he said. Mr. Adair walked into the hall. He smiled at me and Sean. Neither of you are frightened of these girls, are you? He asked. Sean and I both shook our heads. They are beautiful, sir, I said. I knew that I was bold to offer my opinion, but I couldn't help it. He actually beamed in response. Yes, they are, he said. He stared at both Sean and me for a few moments as if he were trying to come to a decision before he waved his hand and smiled. Would you two like to take these girls for a walk? He asked. Sean and I quickly exchanged excited looks before we answered in unison, yes, sir. Mr. Rankin handed a leash to each of us. Steady, these are good girls. Easy with the leash and they won't fight you, he said. Sean and I hurried out of the house. We were soon aware of the fact that we were being led by these dogs instead of the reverse. Do you think they have names? I asked. I'm sure they do, Sean said. We walked slowly, allowing them to stop and take an interest in everything we passed. After a few minutes, Mr. Rankin passed us on his horse. He actually smiled at us. I wondered if I had been too quick to pass judgment on him. He could be a good man after all, I said. No, I am sure he is not, Sean said, wrinkling his nose. I laughed. We continued on and made one detour after another. After more than an hour of walking, we found ourselves at the Murray's cottage. Mr. Rankin's horse was tied up outside of the cottage. Sean grinned. I wonder if the girls need to relieve themselves, he asked in a whisper. I giggled. Hush, Aoife, he said. He put his finger to his lips and motioned for me to follow him. The girls were large and we knew that we had to be quick to sneak around to the back of the cottage. I soothed them with kissing noises and strokes. We started to make our way towards the side of the cottage and Sean's expression suddenly changed. He stopped near a window and looked inside. He then ducked beneath the window. I knew that this was very dangerous. We could easily be caught watching. He motioned for me to look inside. I held my breath and took a quick look. I was shocked. I covered my mouth with my hand. Mr. Rankin was kissing Mrs. Murray. They were in an embrace and they were beginning to disrobe. I ducked beneath the window and stared wide-eyed at Sean. Sean and I suddenly heard someone approaching. The footsteps were not far away. The path ended not long after the Murray's cottage. I knew that the person we heard must be heading towards the Murray's cottage. I looked at Sean with panic. He remained crouched down. He moved stealthily and carefully around the side of the cottage. I followed him. Just as I was rounding the corner, I heard the footsteps approach the cottage gate. I turned quickly and was surprised to see that it was Adam Grierson, the Scotsman that spent the least amount of time with Mr. Adair. I peeked around the corner and saw that his attention was drawn to the same window that Sean and I had just left. He started to walk towards the window. I tapped Sean on the shoulder. I pointed towards the side of the house nearest the window. He nodded. He too had heard Mr. Grierson. He put his finger to his lips again. Our footsteps were silent, and the girls did not make a sound, much to my amazement. They led us to a small barn that was tucked away behind the cottage. Sean carefully opened the door. The girls were trying to nudge it open with their noses. They were starting to get excited. I held my breath. I was certain that we would be caught. Sean and I entered the barn with the girls. He carefully and silently closed the door. The girls tugged and tugged. One began to whimper. Mr. Rankin could be a good man after all, Sean said with a coy grin, repeating my earlier sentiment. I glared at him and then smiled. Our initial assessment of Mr. Rankin had been accurate. He was definitely not a good man. The barn was devoid of light, except for a faint shaft of light that penetrated through a small window. It was a perfect hiding place. We let the girls lead us. I was worried that they sensed a rat or a fox. I did not care for either type of animal, and I knew that I would shriek if I saw either. We were pulled to a corner in the barn, and we both let out a gasp once our eyes adjusted to the lack of light and we saw what was before us. In the corner of the barn was a large stack of sheepskins. A rank smell emanated from the skins. I knew that whomever had skinned the sheep had not properly cleaned the skins. The girls nudged around the skins. I exchanged glances with Sean. He frowned and shook his head. Now we know what happened to Mr. Adair's sheep, he whispered. Mr. Murray is not a good man either, I whispered in return. I was stunned. I had not believed that any of Mr. Adair's tenants had stolen his sheep, but I had wondered who was stealing from him. The thought had never crossed my mind that his head steward was guilty. We should tell someone, I said. I don't know, Aoife. That could be dangerous, Sean said. We both fell silent at the sound of footsteps near the barn door. We waited for at least 30 minutes before we emerged from the barn. Once we did, we ran from the cottage and did not look back. When we returned to the house, we were greeted with shouting. Much to my astonishment, Mr. Adair was shouting at Old Man Seamus. I wondered if Old Man Seamus had been foolish enough to ask about the tenants again. When Sean and I approached, I heard Mr. Adair shout, "I know what is best for him." When he saw us, he made an effort to calm himself. He smiled and fixed his attention on Sean. "Did you enjoy walking my dogs?" Mr. Adair asked. "Yes, sir," Sean replied. "Yes, very much, sir," I said. "Good, very good. I was just discussing your training in the stables. You are coming along well. I believe that one day you will be my stable master," Mr. Adair said. "I would like that, sir," Sean said. "You will have to learn to ride," Mr. Adair said. Sean grinned and eagerly nodded. I looked at Old Man Seamus and saw that he was not pleased. Mr. Adair turned to him. "This child has more sense than you do, old man," Mr. Adair said with contempt. "Sir, he is still too small. Once he has grown some, I will teach him to ride," Old Man Seamus said. Mr. Adair looked away with disgust. I heard the front door open and saw Archibald Campbell walking towards us. He called to Mr. Adair. "Sir, let me take care of the hounds. They must be ready to kill for a meal," he said. He laughed at his own remark. Mr. Adair gave him a faint smile. "I certainly hope they are not in such a state," he said. They both laughed at this. Mr. Campbell took the leashes from us and started to take the girls away. Mr. Adair called after him. "Have cook give them a chicken," he shouted. "Yes, sir," Mr. Campbell said. "Sir, they can't eat a chicken. They will choke on the bones," Old Man Seamus protested. Mr. Adair's face suddenly turned red. He took a few strides towards Old Man Seamus and then hit him across the face. I was stunned. I looked at Sean. He stared straight ahead and did not react. I knew then that he had witnessed similar incidents before. I thought of the time Mr. Dare had thrashed Mr. O'Dowling. I was frightened for Old Man Seamus, and I wanted to thrash Mr. Dare. I will deal with my tenants as I see fit. I will feed my dogs whatever I damn well please. Know your place, old man. You will do as I say, and you will not argue with me. Train the lad to ride a horse, or you will get a full thrashing, Mr. Dare shouted. Old Man Seamus remained silent. He looked at Mr. Dare directly in his eyes without blinking before walking away. Mr. Dare returned to us. His fury subsided almost immediately. He patted Sean on the head. You will start taking riding lessons from Old Man Seamus tomorrow, he said. He walked away. We watched him. Neither of us said a word. The next day, Sean and I were devastated to learn that one of the dogs had been found dead and the other was found whining over the body of her friend. I watched as Old Man Seamus carried the beautiful creature to the stables. I followed him. He knew that I was following him, but he did not turn around and tell me to go away. I watched as he carefully placed her limp body onto the ground. It was then that I noticed that her neck appeared to be misshapen, as if something were protruding from it. I thought of the chicken bones that Old Man Seamus had warned against. Old Man Seamus wiped his brow. I could see that he was as devastated as I was. His eyes were moist, but his tears had not yet begun to fall. She has a bone in her neck, do you see? He asked. He traced the protruding bone with his finger. I nodded and wiped away tears as I watched him. He then straightened himself and looked directly at me. Will you offer to feed the other dog? He asked. I nodded again. I knew that my heart would break if the same tragedy occurred again. Sean emerged from the stables. He walked towards me and gave me a small embrace. I'm sorry, Aoife, he said. I could see that he too had been crying. His eyes were red and swollen. Old Man Seamus looked at both of us. I'll tell the master before we bury her, he said. Old Man Seamus, I shouted. Don't worry yourself over me, Aoife, he said, forcing a smile. Sean and I watched as he walked towards the house. Sean walked back to the stables and returned with a shovel and a wagon. Aoife, help me carry her, he said. I cradled her head and Sean managed the bulk of the weight. We struggled, but we were able to place her onto the wagon. She was the smaller of the two and not yet fully grown, or we probably would not have managed. Sean handed me the shovel and I followed him as he pulled the wagon to an area far removed from the house where we knew that we could bury her. It took a full 20 minutes of walking before we reached the right spot. We had seen Old Man Seamus bury a horse in that part of the estate. Sean spent the next 2 hours digging. I kept him company. When he had finished, Old Man Seamus appeared. What is this? He exclaimed, giving us another forced smile. We want to help you, Sean said. Old Man Seamus shook his head. Good children, the both of you, he said. He took the shovel from Sean. You have nearly finished the job, he said. What did Mr. Dare have to say? Sean asked. The fool believes that someone poisoned her, Old Man Seamus said. I could see that he was disgusted, and I could also see that he didn't wish to discuss it any further. He quickly finished digging her grave. We can bury her now, he said, once he had finished. I cradled her head again and Sean carried her body. Old Man Seamus placed his hands under her body and helped us. We crouched down as low as we could and then dropped her into the grave. I watched as Old Man Seamus and Sean took turns shoveling the dirt over her. They even allowed me to shovel some dirt onto her. I struggled with the shovel, but I was able to add some dirt to the grave. Within an hour, she was buried. Sean and I silently walked back to the house. I knew that we would both have to change our clothes since we were filthy from our task. We removed our shoes before entering the kitchen. Mrs. O'Donnell was in the kitchen. She didn't ask about our shoes or our clothing. She did not say a word. We went to our rooms and quickly changed. Sean returned to the stables and I returned to the kitchen. I entered the kitchen and Mrs. O'Donnell motioned for me to join her. We sat at the table. She had tea and scones ready for us. Mr. Adair is very angry. I think we should all avoid him today, she said. His dog wasn't poisoned. I saw the chicken bone protruding, I began. I know, he is mistaken, but none of us can tell him so, she said. I could see that she was as disgusted as old man Seamus. I buried her, I said. I know, she said, giving me a warm smile and patting my hand. We sat in the kitchen for the better part of an hour, drinking tea, eating scones, and saying very little. It was exactly what I needed. When I rose to leave, I thanked Mrs. O'Donnell and she gave me a warm embrace. I thought of my promise to old man Seamus and tried to think of the best way to approach Mr. Adair and make my request. Even though Mrs. O'Donnell had warned me to avoid him, I was still determined to ask if I could look after the remaining dog. I knew that he could not, and I doubted that any of his Scotsmen could. He would have to trust someone in his household. I couldn't see why that someone couldn't be me. I walked around towards the front of the house. I did not see Mr. Adair. I turned around and started walking back towards the stables when I suddenly heard the sound of several shots fired. They were fired at a distance, but still close enough for the shots to cause me to jump. I heard at least 4 shots. I thought of Mrs. O'Donnell's dry remark when Mr. Adair had previously fired his gun to frighten the tenants. Once again, he was asserting his rights as their landlord. I wondered for how long he would be their landlord. The tenants still had not received new leases, and their notices to quit expired in about a week's time. I heard a shout that sent a shudder through me. It was the voice of old man Seamus in a tone I had never before heard him use. His voice was frantic, pleading, and terrified. "Oh no, dear God, no," he said. I ran towards the stables and saw him carrying Sean towards the house. Sean's body was limp. He did not make a sound. I too was motionless and silent as I watched. I learned later that old man Seamus had been teaching Sean how to ride a horse as Mr. Adair had ordered him to. His instructions had begun with how to properly mount a horse. The horse was Sean's Pegasus. Pegasus always behaved well. She did not become frightened easily, but she did become very frightened when Mr. Adair fired his shots. In her excitement, she threw Sean to the ground and stepped on his chest. He was crushed under her weight. I stop my story. I cannot continue for a few moments. Dr. Foxlow stares at me with compassion and sympathy. I force a faint smile. I am determined to continue. I want him to know. Sean was very strong. He did not die, I say. He recovered? He asks. Not fully. The horse broke 2 of his ribs. One of the broken ribs tore into one of his lungs. The injury was not fatal, but every childhood illness he suffered from that point forward was potentially fatal, I say. How long did he survive? He asks. He lived until he was 18, I say, smiling at the thought of him. You loved him very much, he says. Yes, he was my husband, I say. I can see that I have surprised him. He quickly recovers. Yes, we were married in 1869, the same year that Mr. Adair married Mrs. Adair. I was only 17. He told me that I shouldn't marry him if I only wished to be his nurse. I assured him that I wished to be his wife. We moved into a cottage on Mr. Adair's estate. We were very happy for 6 months, and then he caught a terrible chill, which took only days to silence him forever, I say. You were widowed at the age of 17? He asks. Yes, I say. My thoughts return to that awful day. I see him again. He is pale and weak. He is lying in our bed and his eyes are closed. They have been closed by another, by me. The doctor said that it is just a matter of time. Mr. Adair is speaking softly to Sean and brushing his hair away from his forehead. His eyes move over Sean's face. His hand repeatedly strokes Sean's hair. That is when I finally see it. Mr. Adair's face, his eyes, his chin, and even his mouth, they are Sean's. I had refused to see it until that moment. I had thought of Sean's young mother, imagining how terrified she must have been, alone, ashamed, and with child. And then I whispered their name, Sean. She had loved Mr. Adair, and she had named her son for his father. She knew that Mr. Adair would object to her naming her son John, but he could not object to Sean, because he would have to admit that he knew the two names were one and the same. Mr. Adair, the Scotsman and the Englishman, could never do this. At that moment, I felt that I knew Sean's mother. She had loved a man that did not deserve her love. I had loved her son, and he had deserved my love. Yes, I was widowed at 17. I watched him take his last breath. I watched him die, I say. He has asked me to call on him today at the castle. I am to arrive an hour before his midday meal and stay for tea and the meal. He wants to show me the garden. I have heard that Mrs. Adair has put a great deal of effort into making her garden quite beautiful. He insisted on sending old man Seamus because it smelled of rain. I did not have the heart to tell him that it smells of rain almost every day in Ireland. On most days, it is raining or threatening to rain, especially in Derryvay. But I have to admit that he was right. It has rained steadily since I woke this morning. The first time I set foot in a castle, it was still being built. Mr. Adair had insisted on moving into the castle while it was still being constructed. The main rooms were largely finished, and much of the work that still had to be done was exterior work. He made certain that Mother and I moved with him. Mrs. Adair did not object, even though she must have known of Mr. Adair's attachment to Mother. I was newly widowed and no longer lived in the cottage that I had shared with Sean. Mother had asked Mr. Adair if I could come to the castle, and he had readily agreed. Mother told me that his library room at the castle contained two doors so that she could enter through another door and it would not be quite so obvious that she was visiting with him. When she told me this, I gathered that the library room would be used as the study room at the Glebe House had been used. Everyone knew that Mr. Adair took his morning meals in the study room and was not to be disturbed until he rang his bell. Everyone also knew that Mother was always with him during these meals. This was the time that he set aside for her each day. Once he married, the tradition did not end. He was just more discreet. Mother arrived in the library room well before Mr. Adair. He always carried his own tray into the room. Oddly, Mrs. Adair never inquired as to why he needed this time for himself each morning, or why he always carried two cups of tea for his morning meal. I was given my own room, and Mother was given a room that was twice the size of her room at the Glebe House. We settled into a routine. Mother was still the household servant who had no duties other than pleasing Mr. Adair. I was given light duties that often involved caring for animals. I loved animals, and Mr. Adair knew that I was never more pleased than when I was occupied with them. I was also permitted to assist with needlework and knitting because my skills at both had been called exceptional and praiseworthy by more than one admirer. Mother and Mrs. O'Donnell had taught me well.